Okay, and thanks for that introduction. I hope the sound level's okay. Good. And thanks for inviting me to speak here at Nottingham University, or perhaps I should say thanks for inviting me back, because I actually gave a talk here a year ago. Could just have a show of hands. How many of you were here at that? So just about four or five of you. All right, that's interesting. I had a look at the presentation I gave last year to make sure that I wasn't just repeating myself. And it was interesting. Last year I was talking about blogs and wikis and RSS and how they're starting to be used in Nottingham and some of the potential. What I didn't mention in this talk was Facebook. What I didn't mention was Twitter. I didn't talk about microblogging. So things have moved on really quickly just in that year. So there'll be a slightly different emphasis today, which we'll be looking at some of the social aspects of Web 2.0, some of the opportunities, but also some of the challenges and some of the decisions that you will have to make. And let's be honest, some of the arguments that you'll have. I'm going to give a particular view, but feel free to disagree with me, and that will, I think, inform some of the group sessions today. So Web 2 is a disruptive technology, and actually challenges some of the assumptions that we might have held previously. These slides are available on the web. There's a Creative Commons license available for the slides and also for this talk. So these can be freely used and mashed up and distributed as long as you give acknowledgements to UConn. I should say that that only applies to this talk. Afterwards, I'll take off the mic and I'll have a general chat about things. Okay, I'll get to use. Okay, so I'll give an example of Web 2 technologies and look at some of these challenges that we need to face, the network as a platform, the issue about openness and trust, and some of those social aspects associated with Web 2. There are a set of other topics that I could talk about, but I'll not. Those are available on the slide on this set of slides, but I'll stop after that first set, which will then lead in to the discussions. But do I have to? Oh, this is cool. Okay, well, you've heard a bit about me. I'm a National Web Advisory post based at UConn, and we're funded by JISC and the Museums, Libraries and Archives Council to support the various communities. Been involved in the web since January 1993, and I'm currently very active in promoting best practices for Web 2.0. Or another way of looking at what I do, this is where I've been this year. So it was just over a week ago, I was at a conference in Montreal. The week before that, I had given two talks in the UK, and the week before that, I was over in Taiwan. So what time is it at the moment? I'm a bit sort of, so a lot of that. Or what I did last year, and if you look at these various presentations, you'll notice it's Web 2, Library 2, accessibility, blogs, wikis, that type of thing. So they're my real interest. The other thing I should say is this application, it's a remote application that's for free. I just need a bit of data, and there are loads of these applications, and that's part of the Web 2.0. This is the network provides that application rather than something I have to install in-house. And I'm also have a blog, the UK Web Focus blog. How many of you are readers of that? Just the two. Okay. Because I mentioned Nottingham University in glowing terms just recently. So here was, how many of you, again, is it the same two? How many of you read the Guardian supplements? It is the same two, and someone else at the back. So JISC has just started a debate on libraries of the future. And if you have a look at this, does anybody recognise? Has Stephen failed to show this photo to anybody? Stephen Pinfield, 39, is chief info. Is he really? Looks much. Didn't say this. I'm on. So there was a bit of discussion about my views of this debate, and I think this event, today's event, is really timely. You know, if we think about the context of JISC's view about we need to have this debate. But should we leave this to Google? Should we leave search to Google? And I mentioned the Open Door Service, which is provided. Anybody involved in that here? Okay, so I mentioned the work that Nottingham was doing here. So, and again, my papers, which are available as RSS, and one of the things about these things is it can be easily available, synced, used in different ways, mashed up, made available on iPhones and all the rest of those things. But again, a lot of these issues, the discussion I think about openness, accessibility, and the whole embedding of Web 2.0. So there's some real interests, real strong interests. And I think a lot of these really needed to be addressed within the context of an information literacy sort of strategy. And I've got, there's a book available if anybody would like to see that during the day, which starts to explore some of these things. So it's not just about the technologies. It's about some of the those other softer issues as well, but important policy issues. Okay, so that's the preamble. Let's look at a particular case study of Web 2.0 in a social context. So the social context might be today's event. So here we are, we've had a cup of coffee, we've had a natter, we've caught up with old mates and the like. And now we can do a lot more within the context of Wi-Fi networks becoming pervasive. MP3, you know, recording things, digital. So we have those devices, these devices. Oops, put my pound coin and the. So we have all of these devices are now consumer. Oops, we have our consumer devices, which many staff will have, which we can use within the context of lectures. So the lecture is a social experience. People come together, they listen, they talk to the mates. But now with the various tools, we can talk much more widely. And these things can be streamed away. So, streamed out. Productivity gains, richer and deeper learning. You can start to talk with each other and with people who aren't here and check what I'm saying and look at what I'm saying and bring that to discussion. Really great. New opportunities for exploring ways of doing things. Or it's confusing, it's distracting, it's rude, it's a bit of a fad, it won't take off, it's information overload, it's all a waste of time and effort. You know, so we are going to have, you know, the hype, the excitement, and the backlash. And then we need to look at how we proceed within our institutions. Now, feel free to take photos during the day, but again, this is an issue. The photos build community, shared experiences, shared memories of the event, and the things that can be fun. You know, we like doing that. Have you seen these things? But what can happen? What about the negative side of this? And here's an example at the GIST conference last year. Andy Powell from EduServe took some photos, mashed it up into a thing called Animoto. But then somebody in the audience says, oh, I don't want you to put any of my photos up. So we had to remove that. So there was a wasted investment in taking that. So we need to think that's another example of the dangers. So there are issues about data protection, privacy, the embarrassment factor, and how do we respond to these things. And this is potentially a big issue. Here was something taken from the BBC News site just a couple of weeks ago. Take a photograph out in public, you're either a terrorist or a paedophile, aren't you? And there are examples of the police arresting a 49-year-old, taking a few spots, but the police came along and said you can't. And even Austin Mitchell, MP, had a similar experience. A keen photographer was challenged twice, taking photos on the Leeds to Liverpool canal. Must be a terrorist, mustn't he? So, yeah, these are real issues. We're seeing these things. So we need to think about not only the ease of use of these consumer tools and the real advantages that they can have in enhancing the learning processes, but these dangers. So what do I do? And I should say, I am not a lawyer. But what do I do? Be open. So the first thing I said was, yeah, you can take photos, you can video me. And I gave a scope to that, I said, but not afterwards when I'm telling it what it's really like. And I've said, yeah, Creative Commons licenses, you know, legally clarify the slides, the talk, explicitly give permissions, and I reserve the right to change my mind. What happened? Is this going out live? No. Oh, so if this was going out live, what would happen if I had a Father Jack moment? You know Father Ted? Arse, feck, drink, women. You'd have probably have, you're going to now have to edit out that bit of the podcast. But there's a real example of how do we respond to this potential danger of things going wrong. So this is my approach. And Charlotte, how do you pronounce her name? Velda. At Edinburgh University, I did this, and she was a legal person, and she was saying, oh yes, this type of lightweight approach, legal issues are important, but perhaps we can address them with just that type of lightweight, sensible, pragmatic approach. And so that's what I do when I'm a speaker, like today, when I organise an event. I've organised a lot of what are Law and Dempsey referred to as amplified conferences, or amplified, where instead of the talk's just being restricted to a group, it can be made much more wider. We have notification and provide guidelines and seek permissions and those things. I'll skip over that because I know I haven't got much time. But, you know, what if things go wrong? Speaker doesn't want to be recorded for other reasons. Things go wrong in the live presentation. Speaker changes mind. I did the Father Jack one. Or a gun-toting member of the audience goes berserk. We need to think about risks, and somebody might talk about, you know, those real risks. So how do we respond to them? Speaker doesn't want to be recorded. Well, that's fine. Just say no. And if it's lightweight, you have ways of just switching things off. It's not a problem. Or don't pressurise them. What happens if things go wrong in a live presentation? Well, if they go wrong, it's embarrassing in the live thing, you know. That's not a problem. Change your mind afterwards, not a problem. You know, we can worry too much about some of these things and talk about risks that are unlikely. So within the UK, we tend not to have people coming in with guns. Over in the States, it's different, so they need to take different approaches to how they handle those type of risks. So there are risks, but let's be sensible and let's look at to weigh the probability of those risks. But there are more can be done within this context, I would say. I've heard examples of people take photos, you upload the photos to Flickr in a closed area and say to the people, we're going to make these publicly available in a week's time. Let us know if you've got any problems. That might be one way around it. The whole learning. Oh, managing the physical spaces. So can we have all the geeks over there, who particularly the noisy ones, and we've got some power sockets over there, and those who want to be really focused in the talk and not distracted. So we can use the physical space to manage some of those issues about the amplified events. Information overload. I think some of these things are personal issues and people need to take personal responsibilities. So those of you who've got laptops, you have a responsibility to make sure you know how to disable the sound so that you're not, when you start it up, it isn't annoying other people. And how to configure various applications. So there are issues about the things that, you know, the information services and the library and the e-learning services need to do. But there are also, I think, responsibilities on the user community as well. Jumping the shark from the Fonz, a line from the Fonz. Here's an example from 1999 to today of a range of internet applications. And it looks as though the blue one was really popular. And now, things don't look good. Can anybody give me any suggestions as to what the applications may be? The blue one is in decline, perhaps the red one. Yep.
Blue one,
Facebook. Any other suggestions?
Browser,
Firefox, Internet Explorer, Opera maybe?
VLE,
Blackboard,
yeah.
WebCT. Yahoo and Google, particularly relevant at the moment with the possible hostile takeover.
Friendry United.
Whatever happened to Friendry United? Or they were bought out by, was it Granada or somebody? And was that a wise decision? Okay, let's think about the examples we gave and why you chose those particular examples. This is at the Apache web server. And this is Microsoft's Internet IIS, the Microsoft web server. So everybody knows you're safe with Apache. It's a really great open source web server. And it seems to be in decline. And were we saying Facebook or Blackboard WebCT or Friends Reunited because we don't really approve of those in some ways and we're actually using that decline to justify? So Apache, any Apache fans, anybody who runs Apache and saying, we need to get rid of it? No, of course we don't. Of course we don't.
I suppose at the university, you need both of them
as well. Yes, absolutely. Yes, now that is a really good point. It's not a question, I think, of the single application and we need to know what's best. It's about diversity. And this is a thing that's really, really changed from when I worked in IT services 20 years ago. And that was looking at the best word processor because you knew you only had one to support. So you evaluated the products and decided that was the best. Now, because we had scarce resources and there was a scarcity of providers, now we're in a time of abundancy. And now things have become easier. And now we have, you know, people will have broadband at home. So in the old days, the mainframe people could manage that and say there's only one and we've decided. Now individuals and departments can choose their own. So we're in a time of diversity. So yes, we will have both. This is the famous Gartner hype curve with some additions. So this is the chasm. When something was new, but it fell down the chasm and failed to take off. So I would say that what we need to be doing is to find ways of avoiding the falling into the chasm, managing expectations, and avoiding that drop of despair. So basically, I think what this event is about is trying to reshape this curve within the context of social services. I know social services within a Web 2 context, I would say the big challenges aren't the blogs and wikis and RSS that I spoke about last year. It's about the network as a platform and the trust and openness within this context of social tools. So one of these things, this is going back to that other slide about Web 2, it's just a big bubble, isn't it? You know, it's all going to burst and we're going to go back to our nice, safe, managed environment. But which is the odd one out of those? Humus, Lotus, WebCT, Yahoo. Any suggestions?
WebCT.
WebCT, why?
Humus has merged, so it's defunct. Lotus, taken over by IBM. And Yahoo's been taken over. So Humus, I suppose, has been, all the three have been taken over.
Right.
And hostile takeover, and WebCT is still going.
That's great. You've spoiled the getting other people to give you because you did what, exactly what I was going to say. Did you listen in when I gave this talk yesterday on a video link? So the answer was Humus. I must update this. Humus wasn't taken over. It was a very friendly unification. It wasn't a hostile takeover. Sorry if anybody's listening there. Lotus was taken over by IBM. WebCT was taken over by Blackboard, and Yahoo is the odd one out because it hasn't yet been taken over. But in terms of those takeovers, licenses may change. They may say, we're no longer interested in that particular product because it competes with our main things. So if the institution was into Lotus Notes or all the Lotus products and that takeover, we can say, well, we've got a problem. So the dependencies, that the concerns we may have about the sustainability of Web 2 is in a way nothing new. And if you had services that were hosted at UMIST or various other universities that have been merged or changed the names, there might be issues there. Are there any plans to take over Nottingham University? So let's look at some examples. SlideShare. I think SlideShare is a really great service. I upload my slides to that and I get various benefits, real tangible benefits. So I'm, say, part of a research sector and I want to maximise the impact of my ideas and I need to have the statistics in order to demonstrate to my funders that I'm doing this. So my slides are available on my website, but we get none of that type of thing easy. But up here, we can have the 3,331 views of these slides. That's good. 25 people have said it's a favourite. 278 downloads. People who might want to take the slides and do things with it. 13 embedded in blogs and all of those things. So this is really good. So this is a real tangible benefit at real no cost to my institution. You know, I don't have to install software, procure software. It's just there. So we have this evidence. So I would say this is a good thing. So there's an example. But what happens if SlideShare goes down? And it does. And incidentally, it went down yesterday. Were people aware of the problems yesterday? There was a denial of service attack at Delicious SlideShare and at least one other service. And this came from China. And I think it was a protest against the situation in Tibet. So yes, these things do really happen. So we've got an example here of the head of the VLE team at the Open University captured that image and says, this shows the dangers of a reliance on a third-party service. Sometimes our services go down, but it's our business to keep them up and running because we really care about the users and we have responsibilities. So that happened 10th of November, 6:57 p.m. And shortly after that, a colleague of Neil's, Tony Hurst, tried to go to the Open University server to capture some stats on the uptime of the Open University server, and that was down. The Open University server was down. So that was real irony. And it was perhaps even funnier when somebody from SlideShare said, I spotted your post and concerns just to let you know that, yes, it's a problem and we'll have her up and running straight away, which they did. So it was down for a few hours on a Saturday, but the Open University server, would that have been up over, during the Saturday? So we have those sort of interesting issues. Performance issues, well, the University of Southampton's service was down for about 2 days. You know, that's a really important service. They've got a lot of quality services, particularly in the context of institutional repositories. But their server was down for a couple of days. So you might say, well, can I trust this institutional repository service at the University of Southampton? And how do I know if they're any good or not? Well, there are various ways that you can go, and you can look that their uptime had been, you know, about 18 months, and that's pretty good. So they had some problems back then, but now it's a pretty reliable service. And so I'd say, yes, you can trust them. So there are these various tools around that can be used to look. And so if you go to SlideShare, if you go to TechCrunch, it will give you some statistics. It will give you financial statistics. It will give you the usage numbers. It will give you a various set of data. So what happens if there's a service or a project that's being developed in-house within Nottingham Institution or with some JISC funding? How sustainable is that? What will happen if there are changes there? So the concerns that we have, I think we need to apply to the things that we do in-house as well. And some of the other concerns about Facebook, isn't it data locking? Well, what do these things have in common? Paper, PDF, possibly an iPhone, possibly a Facebook. Well, I would say that they can all be, they're all popular, but they can all be regarded as destinations. So this bit of paper isn't particularly interoperable. This is a walled garden. It can be annotated, but it's difficult to get those annotations out again. Similarly with PDF. But that doesn't mean we don't invest in PDF. I'm sure those of you in the library will know that, yes, that delivery of journals via PDF can be useful and it's worth investing in this. So perhaps if we use Facebook a bit like the iPhone or, your phone, stuff goes here or it goes there. It's part of an individual's personal learning environment or personal research environment. So as long as the data can be got at in different ways, it doesn't matter if one of them is a thing that you can't do much with afterwards. Accessibility is an issue. I had gave a paper on this to say we've really been focusing on the wrong bits in the past. We've been focusing on the accessibility of the resource rather than the accessibility of the service. And now there are lots of different ways of doing the service. We need to look at the holistic approach to doing these things. So this then becomes part of the, if we're focusing on a personal learning environment or a personal research environment, as opposed to the big chunk of software that users can select and choose, the important thing is that those resources, the master resources, are managed and safe, but that those other resources that users may change can reflect their own personal views and preferences. So, and this is where with SlideShare, my slides are on my website, and they're all and are given in the slide itself and in the metadata. So this is this type of a hybrid approach to Web 2. It's not, we don't need to do anything on the institution, we use the stuff out there. It's saying we use the funky stuff and the popularity of these services and the rich functionality of the annotations and the tagging and all of those things. We don't need to replicate those services in-house, but we do have the managed copy, the managed resource in-house. And my final couple of slides, it's a problem with the users, you know. Some of them may be robots and do nasty things, and there are issues about spam. My blog now has over 200,000 spam comments, and I'd be spending all of my time if I was individually getting rid of them. But Akismet blocks most of them, the 99% of them, automatically. But there does need to be a managed approach to these services. So on Sunday, one of my Twitter followers said there were some porn videos on the EduCause blog, and I've removed the flesh-coloured tones from that particular post. But it was deleted a few hours later. So I think the thing is to say, oh no, we can't allow any blog comments unless everybody assigns a form in triplicate, because that can act as a barrier and people don't go there. So you say, yes, open comments, open uploads might be allowed, provided you've got a quick response. And this is, I think, the approach that was taken at the Warwick University, first university in the UK to have provide blogs for all its students. And they had a complaint about this post button, and they have quick responses to get rid of the inappropriate stuff. So why are social networks important? Well, in the old days, the focus was in the standards, the technical architecture. And the trust was in the organisations. But we missed the Web 2 things about the multiple providers of services, new business models. People are social beings and trusting users. So social networks can do lots of these things. We are going to use Flickr for our family photos, so won't people want to use it within their teaching or learning context and research context? And even stuff like Twitter, which is my latest thing that is, I found, really positive and valuable. Information overload, well, this is really a management, a personal, yeah, we need to get over this. I can remember as a child when I got a ticket for the adults' library, and there were all of those wonderful books, and I was thinking, oh my God, how am I going to find time to read all of those wonderful books? And then we get a new generation, it's when you get your digital TV with all those channels. You know, so this is just part of that managing things. So I would say some of the key questions: in-house or remote services, and social software. Does it have to be for everyone, or might it reflect the personal preferences? Please, everybody shouldn't blog, everybody shouldn't Twitter. If it works for you, that's great, but it's not something that we need to impose. And these questions about who makes the decisions, who's responsible if things go wrong, what's the role of the institution, particularly for students who might only be here for a relatively short time. The MS, you know, see students 1 year, undergraduates for 3 years, but they arrive with identities, with emails, with Facebook accounts, with contacts, and then they go and they leave. So after 3 years, 3 years' time, are they going to have to migrate all of their data and contents from an institutional service?